Hey everyone, this is Charity Kramer, and I'm so excited that you are listening to the Queen C Network podcast today. If you are part of our Society of Pageant Women family, welcome. If you are a new member or a fan, welcome, welcome, welcome. I want to further connect with you on social media, on official SOPW, on Instagram and Twitter. And we also have a Facebook account with the /SocietyOPW. You can also visit us on our website at societyopw.com, where you can find more information on our website, our Facebook, and our YouTube channel, as well as register as a member or attend our events or become a sponsor of our platform so we can continue to empower individuals around the world with and without crowns. Society of Pageant Women family, I hope that this podcast episode either empowers you, inspires you, or encourages you, maybe even all of the above. So continue listening today and let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Queens Network with Charity, aka C. Elise on Instagram. Today, we're going to talk about pressure and perspective with Elisa Kramer, who is the fabulous mother of the one and only, your very own, most amazing person in the world. So I'm joking, but she's my mother, and she is a chaplain, and she has guided me throughout my entire life, and is one of, if not the most influential person in my life. So we're going to welcome Mrs. Kramer.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I could not have asked for a better introduction from my one and only Queen C, Charity Kramer. It's such a privilege, actually. I have my doctoral degree, so I am actually Reverend Doctor.
Oh, excuse me, I forgot to say Reverend.
That is a chaplain. Yay me. Hard work. Yes, yes, yes.
Wow. Absolutely. Yes, she put in a lot of hard work to get where she's at. And tell us about where you're trying to go so we can get an idea of who Miss Elise, Mrs. Kramer is.
So.
And where she wants to be.
All right, so where do I want to be? Well, I love educating the masses. So my ultimate goal is to become an educator in chaplaincy. So, and what that includes is another type of vigorous training, and which will allow me to get a certification to be able to teach adults like myself in the art of chaplaincy, because it is an art, in learning how to incorporate various religions and not let your own, as we say, stuff get in the way.
Wow, so you want to teach people to be chaplains, basically, or to learn the art of chaplaincy. What is chaplaincy for people who are listening who don't know what that is?
Most people don't know what a chaplain is, so most people think that when they hear the word chaplain, it's the agent of death.
Dun, 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 dun. Pretty much.
And that is not what a chaplain is. A chaplain is not the agent of death. So what I do is I help families navigate their emotions as they're processing either terminal illness or death. Hmm. So in that, speaking of perspectives, is looking for what's behind the picture. So some people are very tearful. And it's not just because the person is dying or ill. It's because of unresolved issues.
So when you mean tearful, you mean that they're crying a lot and they're kind of hysterical, as most people would consider them?
Not everyone is hysterical. Some people are just emotional. Hmm. So an emotional could mean crying. Emotional could mean throwing a fit. Emotional could mean hurling profanity at everyone. Emotional can mean being aggressive and you not really even understanding what is behind that feeling. My job is to get you to understand what the feeling is. Let's name what the feeling is. So, and most people don't know how to name their feelings. They'll say, well, if such and such hadn't done, that's not a feeling. Mm-hmm. What is the feeling?
And that would be angry.
I'm angry. Or sad. I'm sad.
Frustrated.
Right. Or I'm happy. I'm glad. Gotcha. You know, but all of those, anger comes out of sadness. Mm-hmm. So if I can get you to say I'm sad, which led me to be angry. The anger caused me to want to punch a hole in the wall or crash my car. That came from sadness.
Okay.
And what is that sadness about?
So I guess what you more so help with is helping people understand themselves a bit more.
Yes. Gotcha. Understand yourself. Understand what is the reason behind my reason.
Okay. So, pressure and perspective. Right now, COVID-19 is going on. The coronavirus is nonstop in the news. No, everybody's talking about it. You can't listen to anything without someone mentioning it, including on this podcast.
Yes.
So, in COVID-19, how are you helping people change their perspective about what's going on and not be over anxious about it?
Well, first of all, we have to acknowledge that these are scary times that none of us in this lifetime have ever experienced. So we have to be okay with saying, it's scary. I don't know what to do. I'm angry about having to be home all the time. I'm angry about not being able to go to work. Although you didn't like your job to begin with, now you're upset because you can't go, right? it's one thing to be home if you want to be home. It's another thing to be home because you're told to be home.
Yeah, being forced to be home.
Right. So now we feel like we're forced to be home, right? But if we look at it in a different way and don't think of it negatively, perspective, right? So now you're able to enjoy the house that you're paying for or your apartment. You're able to enjoy the silence. To enjoy not being hurried from one thing to the next. Be able to enjoy going outside and breathing fresh air. Who would have thought 3 months ago that the air quality would have been so much better? It took all of this to get to that. So out of the tragedy came something good. It's all in your perspective.
So for someone who's having a hard time shifting their perspective, like they understand that they're home and they could be thinking about the fact that they have more time to do other things, but they're still wrestling with the fact that they can't do the things that they used to be able to do. What advice would you give to those people to say, okay, here's what you can do step for step. Let's say 3 steps that you would tell people to start with to shift their perspective.
Well, first, I don't know that I would give steps. Because life isn't that simple as a 1, 2, and 3.
Well, if you needed steps, because some people do need steps.
Okay.
For people listening.
Okay, so the first thing that I would probably do is say, let's just sit down and talk about the things that you enjoy. So we would list some things that you enjoy. Then maybe we could list those things that we didn't have to pay for. Then we can list the people that we enjoy doing those things with, that you can still connect with now. So those are 3 things that we can look into. Okay, so no, you cannot go outside and be with a group of 20 people. No. But let's think about the people that we hang around and who they are around. Hmm. And so if we can get a small group of people that we can trust, maybe not a group, maybe let's start off with 1 person that you don't mind spending time with. So, okay, I have this 1 person that I know that I can count on and have a nice time with. So I'm going to call that 1 person and say, hey, let's go out for a walk because that's a safe environment. Mm-hmm. Now you might want to bring your face mask and wear that to be out with that person, but at least you're out doing something. You're not home self-isolating, which is what a lot of people do. They're isolating themselves. So thinking that like you're stuck in a prison in your home.
Mm-hmm. You can't talk to anybody, you can't see anybody, you can't Skype anybody.
Yes. Yeah. So we want to get out of that perspective and say, there are things that I can do. There are people that I can go around with. Like for instance, I saw a group of 5 ladies, and this was a Facebook post, and they got together in their cars and they had a trunk party. So all of them happened to have SUVs. They opened up their trunks, they had their little glasses of wine, and they all just kind of parked someplace safe, and they were able to have safe conversations with all of their friends. It took some thought, it took some planning, but the perspective changed because now they were still able to visit with their friends.
Okay. That's very insightful. Well, we're going to fast forward and talk about something that's a little less heavy.
Okay, thank you.
Because, you know, this is what's going on right now. This is not, you can't get away from this topic.
Right.
So, in this time, actually, I was a part of something with you a couple weeks ago. My youngest brother got married, your youngest son. And that was like, it was a little stressful for me. I'm not going to front, because I had a lot going on that week. Mm-hmm. And I had a conference coming up, and I just got done another conference. But it was still nice to see something good that was going on.
Yes.
Talk about how, well, one, you were the chaplain of their wedding. So for everyone listening, there was a mother that actually chaplained her.
Officiated
the wedding for her son during quarantine. Like that, right. That was kind of like a blessing in disguise.
Yes.
Where you got to share that intimate moment with your son. And talk about that and explain to people, for people who may like have been thrown in the loop for wanting to throw a wedding, like how they could probably adopt the same thing that you did or something similar for their family as well. But also talk about the experience and how that was being the mother in that situation.
Well, first of all, it was an overwhelming feeling. I was happy for my son and daughter in love. However, it was my baby boy that got married. The baby. And although all of my kids are wonderful, and I want success for all of them, and I want everyone, including Charity, to find love and to be loved, it was overwhelming. So I still say, the baby is married. Like, the baby is married.
Everybody thought I was gonna get married first.
Right? Can you believe the baby is married?
yes.
But it was a blessing to for them to want me and my husband to be a part of their ceremony. So we had to figure out a way that we were going to make this work, because my son wanted to be married. He had certain goals and dreams for his own life, and he just didn't want to be living with someone. He wanted a wife. And so in celebrating our son and wanting to do what he felt was right, and then them wanting us to be a part of that union, it was a happy moment, you know, for all of us. Mm-hmm. But still, the baby got married.
Yes. also, let's take a break right there. Yes, my baby brother, who is 23 mm-hmm. right now, got married.
Yes.
And for those who are listening and thinking like, what, that's super young, like why? It's possible. And honestly, it's actually, there's statistics out there that show when you get married younger, especially when you're in love with the person and you're not second guessing anything, that those marriages are much more successful than mm-hmm. people who get married early, statistically.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, my husband and I got married fresh out of college. So we were 21. When we got married.
I could not imagine being married right now.
Yeah, 24 when we got married, 22 when we had our first child.
Oh my gosh, speaking of that, could you imagine if I had married the person I met at 21?
No. We would have a jail ministry. That's okay. We don't want that. My husband and I were in love back then, and we're still in love today. So
it's so cute, guys. I wish you could see it.
I mean, although he gets on my nerves sometimes, and I get on his.
They act like high school sweethearts.
But at the end of the day, he's the love of my life. And I wouldn't trade him most days for anybody else.
Yes, and then fast forward to your son now being in pretty much similar situation. Mm-hmm.
But he married someone that's a little older than he is. And he's 23, yes. But in a couple of months, he'll be 24, mm-hmm. so 23.75.
He's still the baby. I will say in that scenario, before we go forward with this story, I was kind of feeling a little type of way.
I know you were. We had to have a lot of talks.
Because I was like, you know, to keep it in context, he was in college. I didn't get to see him that much. I also had my own businesses, plus I was working, and I had just started a new business when he got out of college. He moved right out of college to Connecticut, and I hadn't had a chance to go see him. And I was kind of frustrated because now, like, as soon as I kind of get some free time, like, he gets married and now he has somebody in his house.
And he was your hanging partner.
He was my hanging partner. He was like my, you know, when stuff went down and when it didn't go down, like, we were together. We had our time, even when he went to college during the summertime, like, y'all's anniversaries on his birthday. So him and I always had time to connect around that time.
And that was hard for both of you, especially you, because
he was like, whatever, I'm done. Like, I got a wife now. I was like, well, dang, he just threw me in the garbage. Yeah. That's how it felt.
Yeah, but you know, sibling love never changes. It just evolves. Mm-hmm. As all of us do. You get older, life changes. People come in the family, people leave the family. And except for this family, the only way out is through death. but everything changes and evolves, and you have to readjust your perspective.
Perspective, yes.
Right?
I had to look at it. How did I think when we had a conversation, you were like, you're gaining a sister? I don't like having sisters. I've had my brothers my whole life.
Now
I don't need to have any sisters.
Now you have a sister in love. Is what I say. I don't like the term daughter-in-law because to me, it has a negative connotation. That's my perspective. And when I heard the term daughter-in-love about 17 years ago. And I saw how those families interacted with each other. And it was beautiful. And it was something that I wanted. I've always been a daughter-in-law and have been treated like an outlaw instead of in the law. So I choose not that term. So I want our children and whoever they love to know that they are a part of our family.
Mm-hmm. And this happened very quickly. So fast forward to the actual progression. They met
on your birthday?
Yes, on my birthday they met. I was actually the facilitator and not knowing.
But I told Charity when I saw this young lady, I was like, her and my son would hit it off like wonderfully. And Charity was like, no, I'm not going to introduce my friend to my little brother.
I was being a big sister, yep.
And so I just left it at that. And then one day Charity happened to bring her to one of our women's fellowships. And I really got a chance to see who she was. And I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna push anything. I don't believe in playing matchmaker. If they're meant to be together, they will be together.
And then my birthday came. And my brother was like,
birthday came.
She's kind of cute. Would you mind helping? I was like, no, but here's how you can approach her. And he did just that. And I said, I don't want to be in the middle of it because if it doesn't go well, I don't want to be the problem.
Yeah, but you know, what was even funnier about that was we had asked him earlier that day if he was going to go out and celebrate with you. He didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. And he was making plans to go hang out with one of his friends. And those plans fell through. So he was like, he goes and gets dressed. And we're like, where are you going? He was like, I'm going to go out with Charity. I'm like, you're going with Charity? And he was like, yeah, I'm going out with her birthday. And we're like, Okay.
He always goes out. Don't we always do something for our birthday?
No. Well, he didn't want to this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to. So to bring it in context, he was kind of done dating, and he didn't want to be around people that he could possibly be matched with, or, you know, people that he would just become disappointed with. And I understood that. And he kind of just wanted to stay home and get what he wanted to get done and just hang out with his friends, because the stories about the girls that he had interacted in the past, they were not nice to him.
No.
And he's
a really nice guy.
Yeah, my brother is a sweetheart. He really is a sweetheart. And he's super romantic.
Yes.
And he never really had a chance to have that with someone. So he was kind of tired of dating, and he didn't want to go out. He knew I would have my girlfriends with me. And he was just kind of like, I don't know if I want to go. Like, that, maybe that's just for you and your girls. And I was like, no, guys will be there too. And then when he got dressed, all my other guy friends showed up, and he was like, okay, I won't be the only guy.
Right. And it was so funny, because when his now wife came in the house, she was like, where did his brother come from?
She said.
She was like, I saw all the brothers. I never saw that brother before.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Sorry, Kristen, if you're listening. But
it was cute.
Yeah, it was definitely cute. They was eyeing each other the whole night. I was like, what's... Yeah, I was like, I'm not going to pay attention. I said, I need me a couple drinks before a second. But, yeah, so perspective. You come to the realization with the fact that your youngest son is about to be married within less than 6 months of him knowing this young lady. And how did you... Most moms would be freaking out. How did you kind of come to settle?
I was settled. Because, first of all, I trust my children. And I had met her. And I kind of knew and understood her character. She had a good spirit about her.
Yeah, so she was also my friend, for everyone listening. She was my friend before they started dating, too.
Yeah. So, I was fine with that. And, so that didn't cause me anxiety until after they got married, is when I was like, my baby is married. but I was happy for them both, because I knew that they were both nice people. Mm-hmm. Is every day going to be a wonderful day? No. But I have confidence that whatever it is that they'll go through, that they will look to their faith and that they will make it through it.
Mm-hmm. And perspective, just to bring perspective in the context, like, you guys always raised us to always look at the different perspectives of things. So a lot of people always come to me and they say, how are you happy all the time? I'm not happy all the time. I just try to look at things from a perspective that will make me kind of be grateful for the moments, because it's so easy to get stuck in the dark moments. Mm-hmm. And it is a little more difficult to kind of flip it, but once you flip it, it's like, that perspective can really change the trajectory of your life.
Right.
Really.
Well, most people get caught up in that one negative moment. So, like, even when you were in school, and if I went to the classroom to pick you up, and the teacher was like, "Oh, Charity had a very bad day today." Okay, well, explain to me how Charity's whole day was bad. And the teacher says, "Well, Charity got mad and threw the pencil at the little boy. This actually did not happen." Yeah. But, so then I would correct the teacher and be like, so Charity didn't have an entirely bad day. She had a moment that she was angry, but that is not the whole day. And the teacher would go, oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And so, but what we typically do is we would have a fantastic day. And then you'll go to the store and the person slams the door in front of your face, or trips you over their shoestring or something. And then you say, oh, the whole day was bad. Mm-hmm. No, the whole day was not bad. You had a bad moment.
Yeah. So
let's look at the moment, right? Honor that moment. And so that we can move on.
Exactly. So just to summarize all of that. A moment, don't let a moment define your day or even your life. Like, things happen. Mm-hmm. Life is not always going to be great, but guess what? Every single second, every single minute, every single day, every single year going forward, you have the opportunity to make a new decision.
Absolutely.
And to change your perspective so that you're going forward, things are different.
Right.
And you can make a better decision going forward. You can change, you know, whatever happens next. Let's say you trip, because I used to be clumsy when I was younger.
I'm still a little clumsy.
I'm not as clumsy as I used to be. But let's say, you know, and this happened actually. I went to the park one time thinking I was cute and I had my heels on and I jumped off the monkey bars and landed on my ankle and twisted it. And my mom said, "Girl, why would you go to the park with heels on?" I said, I just wanted to look cute. Like, I had just gotten these new shoes and everything. And I would come home and I'd be like, "Man, like, I can't use this leg." And my mom would be like, "Well, be grateful you didn't break it." And I was like, "True, that's a good perspective." I didn't break it, it's just twisted. It hurts, but it's just twisted, so that's good. So don't let a moment define you mm-hmm. in totality.
Right, exactly.
So obviously you've had a lot of experience with me being in pageants, and I am a former / kind of current pageant person with Society of Pageant Women and prior experience competing. How did you deal with the pressure and change the perspective while I was prepping for pageants?
Well, first of all, as long as you were okay mentally, I was fine. But in pageantry, I find it to be very demeaning of young women. Very critical. And I was not going to let that be my daughter's thought process of what someone else's opinion of her was. So when you would go to those pageants and they wouldn't pick you and you'd be crying, I'd go, no, suck up those tears, boss up, girl, be a boss.
I didn't cry that often, by the way.
But I was like, I'm not boss a crier. Up, boss up, because it doesn't matter what they say about you, it's what you say about you. And yes, all of us need to grow and develop and we do change, but you don't let someone's negative opinion of you change who you are deep down.
Good, good. So you said you think pageants are demeaning. Can you explain that a little further? Because people know how I feel about pageantry. I've had great moments, but I also have moments that I critique as well. For people who are listening, listening to your parent perspective.
Right. Well, I don't say that like every pageant is demeaning, but some women don't have good insight into themselves. So they look at everything through a critical lens when it comes to shaping young women. And instead of them offering critiques that will help better the young women, they will criticize them to the point of demeaning them and body shaming them and saying and telling them that they are not good enough.
So give an example for people who are listening.
So
a real example.
There was a time when Charity competed. It was earlier in, should I say the organization or not?
Don't say a name, organization.
Okay, so Charity was competing with this organization.
You can say the year I was competing.
And I don't remember the year, but it was at some school, and Charity sings beautifully. And so Charity was up on a stage, and at this point in time, we were new to pageantry. And so Charity sang a cappella, did a beautiful job, mesmerized the audience. There was another young lady there who did have music, didn't know how to turn a microphone on and just screamed. And they chose her. And so, and then parents were coming over to me and my husband after the pageant and was like, "Oh my God, I cannot believe that this person won over Charity." And so people were like, and then as the pageant directors and their assistants were listening to other people telling us that you should have won that pageant, they came over and they were like, "Oh, well, you know, Charity should have had music and she should have done this, she should have done that."
Oh, and this was the one where they also said, "Well, you know, she's not going to win because she's pretty, right?" And they said something smart like that. Because that was my very first pageant with that particular system. I remember that. Mm-hmm. I had a sparkly shirt on and my hair was... That was my very first one.
You know? And so... When the person or people came over to me, I said, yeah, this young lady was so much better than Charity that she didn't even know how to turn a microphone on. And she screamed all the lyrics. If you are a singer, you know the difference between singing and screaming. And she screamed. Mm-hmm. And so when I said that, she just put her little head down and turned around and walked away like a little puppy. And that way, they had all these negative things to say about you. And then later on, someone commented about how you are built. And because everyone that they picked, first of all, was Caucasian. Very, very slim, and didn't have any breasts, thighs, or buttocks, which are things
like
that African American people have.
I was a double zero at that time too.
Charity was a double zero, but she still had hips,
curves, yep.
And a butt. Mm-hmm. She was a curvy girl, even a size double zero.
Yeah.
And this particular director was telling Charity that she needed to work on her body image. Are you kidding me? A double zero and you are criticizing my daughter's body?
By the way, at that time I ran track, I did ballet, I was cross country, I had really a super flat tummy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was very fit. Right. I was very, very fit.
Yeah, exactly. So I just told the person what it was. And she was shocked. And so I told her, I said, no, what you're describing is a Caucasian person. My daughter is a melanated young lady. So if you don't want melanated people in your system, then let's be clear about that.
Two snaps from my mom right here,
and
being
so
honest.
She was like, oh no, Mrs. Kramer, I didn't mean that. I'm like, you didn't have to say that you meant it. You are telling me that you didn't mean it, but everything that you said alluded to that.
Yeah.
So, if you don't want melanated people in your system, how about not having them in your system?
Don't take our money.
Exactly. You know? And so, the next year, Charity didn't win, but they gave it to someone who really didn't deserve to win.
The next year?
Yes, the next year. They let it be a melanated person.
Oh, yeah.
But they were not the best.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they could say that they gave it to someone other than a Caucasian person.
Yes. So we'll probably talk about token minorities in future podcasts because that is a real thing with organizations. And we've had this conversation before, and it's that in the brown community when you have to have the conversation of, well, she was brown enough but not too brown to where she would be considered completely brown.
Yes.
And you know, we've had that conversations before, and I remember even being in a competition backstage where one young lady made top five, who was the only brown skin girl out of our group that made it. And when she made top five, she came backstage and she said, I know only one of us could have placed top five because they need the one for the number.
Right.
And she said, it's sad, but when I go on that stage, I'm going to remember all of you because all of you girls deserve to be up there in top five.
And she wasn't the best one to be there either.
She wasn't, but I will tell you this, she was one of the director's favorites. Mm-hmm. At that particular time, and the girl that was actually training with her with the main director won that year.
Mm-hmm.
So there are politics in pageants.
Oh, for sure.
But I love how, bringing it back to perspective, how you always, growing up with me, made me understand that perspective was important in the way that people view me, the way that they treat me, and the way that I view and treat myself. And I remember even going through relationship stuff, you would always give me a different perspective and challenge how I was viewing my situation. And sometimes it frustrated me. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it frustrated me. But the truth hurts sometimes. And sometimes you have to be realistic with yourself and realize that when you're not giving yourself the best, to recognize that so that you can give yourself better. And that was something you always did for me that I always appreciated. So I think we have been talking for a while.
Yes.
So,
and Charity is a talker, and I'm tired
wow,
now.
She can talk for days too, so don't believe her.
Well, I did work today, and I've talked to a lot of family, so
yes.
I'm tired.
Yes. She is an essential worker.
Yes.
So am I, though, so that's why I'm checking.
Okay.
I am. On paper,
she is. She
I'm
is.
Kidding. But thank you so much, Mom,
absolutely,
Mrs. Kramer, for being on my podcast. And I hope for everyone that's listening out there that you enjoyed this. Are there any last words and last remarks that you would like to say?
Remember to always love yourself first and to love yourself enough to not let someone else's perspective overshadow who you were created to be.
All right, and amen, Minister, Reverend, Doctor. Lisa Kramer. Well, again, thank you everyone for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. See you later.
Bye.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, I want to encourage you to like or share it on social media or jump onto the website societyopw.com and support us by becoming a registered member, sponsor, or even purchasing a product on our website to support us so that we can continue to connect women and leaders around the world while also changing the pageant industry for the better, one crown at a time. Thanks for listening.